Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Brendan Kraft, engineering and producing our show. Hey, Brendan, how are you?
Good. How are you, Bill?
Hanging in there, doing well. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It's the midweek edition. It's Wednesday, the 10th of September, 2023. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Center here in Central Tucson, 5 radio stations, all doing very well, very proud of all of them. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for live trusted news and talk. We'll be closing in on our 15th full year with the radio program in my, 37 years here in Tucson, radio and TV at the end of the year. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, once a month, we welcome back to the program the Tucson City Councilman representing, Democrat representing Ward number 2, Paul Cunningham. Councilman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it was a busy council agenda yesterday. Before we get to that, this incident involving a bus driver over by, it was in your ward, over by the Udall Center. How is the driver doing? It was hit by a passenger, hit him with a rock?
Yes, the passenger accosted the driver, hit him with the rock, then fled on another bus. And the driver, from my last understanding, is non-seriously life-threatening injuries, but I don't have an update, so that's old information. So I don't want to speak before I get briefed again. What I'll tell you is that we can't have this. We really need to understand. We really need to take time and think about whether or not our current bus policy and our current bus fare policy, and how we operate it, is keeping our drivers safe.
Mm-hmm.
We need to take the time to examine that and take an honest look,
mm-hmm.
because this is one of several. This is about the fourth or fifth incident at that bus stop at the Udall Park where 4 bus lines hit the end of the line.
Right.
So everybody has to clear the bus
right.
when they hit the end of the line. That is not sustainable for me. In that we're having that much activity at bus stops. This is also the 7th or 8th time that we've had an issue, not just in Ward 2, and probably the 20th to 30th time we've had a problem at a bus stop. But let me give you a little more in depth. I rode the bus incognito a few weeks ago. While I was on the bus for 3 hours, I observed multiple people using fentanyl openly while on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
One person boarded the bus after about 5 minutes of me being on it. The person riding with me pointed out that person had been removed from the bus 2 days earlier because she had spit on a driver.
Oh, my goodness.
We can't go on like this.
This has got to change.
Multiple examinations of different bus stops during my walk in the same period of time, I recognized dried up human feces at bus stops.
Oh, my gosh.
And these are all things that we have to decide whether or not are we serving the public? Are we serving our drivers? And are we properly resourced? We're facing a $25 to $30 million budget deficit at the end of this year. And it's really hard. It really begs the question of what our priorities are, because right now, I think to some degree, this experiment has failed. Look, I'm all about having a robust system where people can get free passes, but our hop-on and ride policy, our laissez-faire hop-on and ride policy, we don't have any expectations, or there's really no social contract with the folks riding. So those are some of the issues. I think one of the pieces was we really thought that at some point our community partners would step in and out of the goodness of our hearts magically write us big checks to help pay for a subsidized bus.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work like that.
There was talk the University of Arizona would step up and help. They didn't.
We'd never get that unless an actual bus fare structure existed, and then we could go to community partners with some leverage. But without that leverage, we could never do that. We've got to be able to negotiate a little bit better. So you're not going to get community partner buy-in without bus fares right now, and we're not going to get safety on the bus with the policies that we have. I'm sorry. The proof is kind of in the pudding, if you will. I hate to be a cliche, but that's a fact.
What about starting bus fares and having a transit police force like some cities do?
So the bus fare The bus fare take is probably 6 to 9 million at the most.
Mm-hmm.
If with community partners, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. Whether or not we put that into the actual system. Remember, I've advocated that we have a tapper. A tapper is a system that you see in a lot of European countries where you tap either a credit card, your fare card, or your free pass. It taps the door, the door opens.
Okay.
If you don't have the pass, the door won't open.
Okay.
So there's some expectations on people getting
Why not do that?
Well, that's what I asked for. So I was voted down 5-2. So that's what happened. But I mean, we'll obviously hopefully have an opportunity to revisit
who
this.
Who is the second vote in the fight?
Myself and Nikki Lee voted to reinstate bus fares.
Obviously, you're going to bring this up again.
The mayor, I was already voted down, so I can't bring it back, and that's up to the mayor and council. But something's got to give, and right now, the fact of the matter is that the five people who voted for that are taking the drivers for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot have that.
No. There is money if folks decide to say yes to the Regional Transportation Authority, a 20-year plan. There is money for transit security, I understand, in that program.
Yes, there's a lot of pieces to it. And I think, again, the RTA package is the best version of the package, kind of made it out at the last hour. I actually talked to Mike Ortega today, who's the new executive director.
How's he feeling about it?
Of course he's feeling great about it because he helped kind of rescue it.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that if I have confidence of any two people to try to make something like this work, or three, actually the Holy Trinity, if you will, is Carolyn Campbell, Ted Maxwell, and Mike Ortega. Those are three of the people that I personally admire on such a level that I think we've got some opportunity here to pass a package that's really responsible and great for the region. And you hear me always talk about it, incorporation and all that stuff, and you forget that as a region, we're still a team.
Mm-hmm.
We still got to be on the same page, and we still got to work together, and this is an opportunity to do that. So you've got to pick your battles there. And speaking of the incorporation thing, we've had some positive conversations in the last few weeks of different folks around the community. So I think all those things are in place.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, if we can get RTA Next across the finish line, it would definitely improve some of the issues we're having with transit.
Well, every elected I've spoken to seems to say, well, they say Andres Cano was here, supervisor, yesterday. He said he's going to be speaking out for it. Of course, Fletcher was on our program, Fletcher McCusker, on Monday. These folks all are saying they feel pretty good about this and that it's got a shot at passing.
So you're going to have the folks that are going to say,
how's
no,
this going to line up?
Well, the folks that are going to say no lately, the folks that have been saying no to stuff are way left or way right. They're kind of like they don't trust the middle of the road type things where people are just trying to understand the whole system. And there's either people saying what's in it for everybody, or they're saying, or there's other people saying what's in it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't meet those needs, they kind of fall off. And that's kind of going on around the country right now. We live in a volatile time where the divisiveness that's kind of encroached the body politic and politics itself has taken over.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have the bipartisanship from days of old that you see. You don't have – it used to be very okay for Republicans and Democrats to work together. It used to be very okay for conservatives and liberals – to have lunch together and figure out compromise solutions where not everything was perfect, but it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And that art has kind of been compromised by the wayside. Way too many preconceived opinions, way too many assumptions of what other people think. And I don't know how we get out of that rut as a nation, but it is something that I don't even think the damage it does to the community as opposed to what it could possibly do to our country. it's really scary.
I'll tell you one thing everybody seems to agree on is Mona's Danish Bakery, where left, right, center, whatever, everybody comes together at Mona's. 20 years plus, they've been in the community, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. You're going to find some of the most beautiful European-style pastries. And of course you're going to get good European-style pastries, because Steve, the owner, spent a lot of time in Denmark, and he learned the culinary craft over there. Of course, they do the Danish kringle, and on it goes. Beautiful, beautiful pastries awaiting you. 7 a.m. they open each day, except Monday. They take a well-deserved day off. Go by, say hi to Steve and the team, and tell them you're glad that they are back. As a sponsor here, they took the summer off. We're glad they're back here in the fall. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Segment number two is coming up with Paul Cunningham right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the midweek edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's replenishment time for many people in their gardens. This monsoon was a no-show, so basically I think we had maybe an inch of rain at our place. It seems like every storm missed us in the central foothills. 3384 East River Road for Green Things. Stop by and... there are some, certainly, if you're like me, there are plenty of places to put some fall color in the garden, replenish the stuff that just didn't make it. We were waiting for the rain. It didn't come. And some of the plants just couldn't wait any longer and hang on. All right, when we do the telephone interviews, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Paul Cunningham, Ward 2 Democrat, is with me in studio. We were talking in segment one about the SunTrend driver who was hit by a rock. We hope the driver is doing well. Paul Cunningham says something has to be done about the bus fares, the free fares. Something's got to be done. That was one of the topics we covered in segment number one. City Manager Tim Tomier was given pretty much thumbs up. The whole council said, Tim, you're doing a good job. He had a job review. Went well, right, Paul Cunningham?
Yeah, for the most part, that's executive session, so most of it's okay. Privileged. But he was. I made a motion that said that he had met or exceeded all of the expectations of him, and that his contract was renewed or continued, and that passed 7-0.
City Attorney Mike Rankin, after over 20 years, he's pretty much a nonpartisan guy, the city attorney. He's now retiring, is that right?
33 years with the city, 21 as city attorney.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny with Mike, he was up to be a magistrate about 20 years ago, 21 years ago. So he's up to be a magistrate, and he doesn't get the magistrate, and he was heartbroken for all of like 3 minutes because Carol West, my predecessor, Ward 2 city council person, one of my mentors, one of the most dearest people in the world, said, don't worry, Mike, we've got other plans for you. And within a year, he was city attorney. So mm-hmm. It's a great story. It's one of those inside baseball, but great folklore. And Mike started as the city attorney. He was relatively young to be a city attorney, and there were some growing pains early on, but by sometime around in the 15s and 16s, he became, in my opinion, like the go-to city attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He was like the city attorney of city attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
He was the go-to just leader, and had emerged as one of the most effective city attorneys in the state of Arizona, if not the country.
You're doing a search, or...?
We've got a search. We've got four candidates. They'll be announced probably either by the end of the week or early next week. We'll kind of move from there. Mm. I think I don't know if I'm allowed to say whether they're internal or external.
That's all right.
But yeah, we have a whole process going.
All right. So this model, put that in air quotes, the model situation with homeless people, I think 25 unsheltered would be able to find some kind of shelter over, was it West Grant?
Yes.
And neighbors are saying, please, let us have a say on this.
So there were a couple of neighbors that came forth last night and demonstrated some discontent for this process. A few things. One, people have really wanted us to step up and work on this. So I think that's important, and I'd like to acknowledge that Ward 6 and Ward 3 collaborated, I think, with Ward 1 and the mayor's office to make this Star Village piece worked. We're in a situation where we kind of have to try everything. So I'm not. You've got to give credit where credit is due, and that is at least you're trying something. But I'm really worried that when the numbers come out, we're going to find we're spending like over $150 a night for people to sleep in tents. Well,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's our best, but maybe it will. The associated costs will diminish over time as the encampment is up. It's a good experiment. It's a jumping off point. I'm glad that we have outreach for folks that are in the worst place, but once they go through, like, imagine the social services pipeline as a hose.
Mm-hmm.
There's a golf ball in it. There's an obstruction, and the obstruction isn't getting them into shelters necessarily. The obstruction is getting them out. The obstruction is we just have so many folks that have gone through the process, have gotten sober, are working on their 90 and 90 or their post rehab treatment. They've secured employment or income sources, and they they owe past utility bills, or they have debts outstanding, or they haven't paid child support, or whatever it is, and they're trying to clean up their wreckage, and they just don't have the resources to do it. They can't even get a lease because it would cost like $2,800 for them to move in anywhere. And for a person who's working for the first time in 3 years off the streets, you can imagine what kind of employment they have and how reliable it is. So that's kind of, I think, the bigger test. And we're trying to challenge people to get on their feet in 90 and 180 days, which is 180 days, I think, is realistic. But it's still a challenge. And you know, finding the gaps in the system, all the different gaps that we have, for folks that are facing a myriad of different challenges is part of why this crisis is so, pervasive.
Do you think that the citizens of Tucson would vote as Tucson City Councilman Kevin Dahl is proposing for a quarter cent increase in the sales tax in November to be asked to address homelessness?
I don't know what people would vote for right now. I don't think that.
By the way, he also had a second. He would also put a second quarter cent increase for public safety.
Yes. So, yeah. So the idea is to break it up. So you took 414 with 2 half cents and changed it into 2 quarter cents and let the voters decide.
Okay.
The big piece to that would be, for me, I think the big piece to that is, which one pays for the free bus? Because I think that's really important. Otherwise, I think that's like the lightning rod issue right now. I think there's a lot of people that are, I think everybody wants to help people get where they want to go, but whether to have a pass system or just a hop on and ride policy. Mm-hmm. And I think for me right now, considering the safety issues we're having, it's pretty tough to say that the hop on and ride system is actually working well. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Very few cities have it, don't they?
Well, there were a few left. I think us in Kansas City were the last. Some people have put it back in, but they have other safety programs in place. So I don't want to speak out of turn, but I know that Kansas City and us were the last two, and Kansas City put fares back in. But I know there's other areas going to free bus, and there's places where having a free transit zone, like if you're in a tourism area like in Vegas or in even Honolulu, that would make sense. That would make sense. But you've got to game that out. I mean, there's so many nuances, Bill, with bus fares. Bus fares are related. You relate them to, remember, we have 5 different pieces of transit. We have Sun Van, Sun Shuttle, Sun Tran, and Sun Link. Mm-hmm. And all of them have different functions, serve different areas of Tucson. They're all interconnected as one transit system. But people assume that the transit subsidy is only for the Sun Tran bus, where we're having a lot of these issues. It's also for Sun Van, where we do paratransit. That's super important. I have no issue spending some money on paratransit. The issue is that, counterintuitive to what people think, if we had fares, we could have a premium paratransit where we could offer an almost Uber-level service to wheelchair users for a modest fee, for no more than they'd pay for an Uber. Well, I think we should be able to do that. I think that paratransit users should be able to call and get a ride within an hour or two, just like the people who have Uber and Lyft. So those are some of the nuances to this that make it so difficult. And we've tried to challenge back on some of the FTA laws over the years, but it's very regimented how the federal government kind of hands out the subsidies and allows for cost and other costs.
Non-disclosure agreements, are they going to be fine-tuned like Pima County has decided to do?
Yeah, I voted for it. I thought it was a pretty good policy. Look, here's the thing. As an elected, I'm never signing an NDA. I don't care. I don't care what happens. I was never going to sign one anyway. But it's good for us to know that early on that we have people working for us in an NDA. And the reason that we don't ban NDAs altogether, which again, seems like the better thing to do. What I'd tell you is that the reason that we don't ban NDAs is because there are some businesses that would not approach Tucson at all if we had zero NDAs. So it's a trade, but I think the policies set forth, I think they were proposed by Supervisor Allen. They're good. They're good parameters.
Fletcher McCusker, in his interview Monday, said the pipeline for economic development has basically dried up because of what happened with Project Blue. Your reaction to what Fletcher said?
I think time will heal that pretty quick, and I think we go on to the next deal. I mean, I get it. Nobody wants a reputation that you can't do business here. But again, the groundswell and the just the overwhelming antipathy for Project Blue and how it materialized was incredible. So everybody was sitting there, and we had people from all walks of life and all parts of the political spectrum saying, you know, we don't really trust these guys, and I didn't either. So that's why I came out early against it.
Okay. I know you need to get on to a television interview with Channel 4. They want to talk about the bus situation, and I'm sure you're going to tell them something's got to be done, right?
Well, the same thing that we basically talked about almost for a half hour here, but it's really important. I see that Karen's coming on after me.
Karen Caesar, yeah.
Yeah, and I just wanted to tell you to the Caesar family our condolences. We attended the Joe Caesar's funeral yesterday. He was a titan in Tucson.
All right. Thank you very much. Talk to you next month.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Once a quarter here on the program, we talk about, I think, the most important resource. Hey, if we don't have water, we don't have anything, right? Arizona Water Quarterly, presented by the Central Arizona Project, Your Water, Your Future. Joining us on the show, Karen Caesar is here, Pima County Representative on the Central Arizona Water Conservation District Board. Folks can learn more about CAP at cap-az.com. Karen, great to see you. And I echo what Councilman Paul Cunningham said before the break. We are very sorry to hear about Joe Caesar and all he contributed to the community. And of course, Mr. Caesar was your father-in-law.
Yes, thank you so much. We had a beautiful service for him yesterday, if I just may take a minute. Sure. And maybe tie into, of all the things he did, he was one of the instrumental businessmen in the 70s that helped bring, you know, the coalition of businessmen, and this will tie into something we'll talk about in a few minutes. There was a coalition of business people in this city that were really instrumental in ensuring that Tucson got Central Arizona Project mm-hmm. water, and my father-in-law was one of those men. So Tucson has so much to thank him for. So appreciate your words. Thank you, Bill.
So we made it through the summer, and we didn't get much rain. I was saying at the beginning of the program, maybe an inch up at our place. I couldn't believe it. But hopefully we've got cooler mornings and evenings ahead, right?
Well, least we do that. But you know, today's weather notwithstanding, no. We've got a little bit more to go. And yeah, our rains this, I think Marana made out in the inches
just
department.
A little bit above normal for Marana,
right,
which I'm happy for them.
But the rest of us here, we're suffering. But you know, the calendar goes on and time goes on. And so we're still here and we're still working on water.
So the tier one shortage, is that still in the offing for 2026?
Yes. That is definitely every August, so that just recently the Bureau of Reclamation comes out with their 24-month study. They do it every month, but the important one is in August, and that's where they look ahead and make a declaration on what tier shortage the Colorado River will be in for the next year. So for 2026, we maintain ourselves in a tier one shortage, and that's good news. We've been, you know, despite some below average runoff and some other problems, we know that for one more year we're going to just be in the tier one shortage, and we've been in this status of reduction for almost a decade. So it's we know this, and we've been working within those bounds. So that was definitely very good news. But as I said, there was below average runoff and less water flowing into Lake Mead from Lake Powell, and you know that is a problem going forward for sure.
But we're in better shape due to some of these voluntary and mandatory reductions.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that we keep, you know, saying and reminding is the reason we are is because Colorado River users, through our CAP customers, through On River users, primarily Arizonans, have done voluntary and, you know, compensated reductions, leaving huge amounts of water, you know, in Lake Mead to keep those levels propped up, so we don't drive ourselves into a lower tier shortage. But
Lake Powell's still a question mark.
Oh yeah. So our two yardsticks, right? Yeah. Well, our one yardstick is Lake Mead, but Lake mm-hmm. Powell is the storage for the upper basin, and we really have to, you know, worry about Lake Powell because it really depends on a lot of inflows, and again, reduction in runoff. We get a good snowpack, but the ground is so dry, even a normal, close to normal year is not running off close to normally. So inflows into Powell are reduced, and then that has an impact, obviously, on the outflows that go to Lake Mead.
So we need a lot of water, basically, to ensure the river operations remain in compliance, correct?
Right. Well, we definitely do, and we definitely need to balance what's happening between Powell and Mead. And, you know, we know that the up in our upper basin, so let's remind everybody that our upper basin states are Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico. And the upper basin's consumptive use of Colorado River has been increasing while the annual runoff is decreasing. And everything ultimately needs to end up in Powell. And then depending on how much is in Powell, then discharges or releases that go to Lake Mead are happening. And we need at least 7.48, so roughly 7.5 million acre feet, to ensure that river operations remain in compliance with the Colorado River Compact. And that's a big deal right now because we are in this negotiation. We're heading for reconsultation, and we need to, you know, we are obviously supportive of and insisting on that we have compact compliance. That is the governing, you know, law of the river that says how much the upper basin should release to the lower basin.
Well, we'll keep a close eye on that. But there's something I heard about a coalition you're basically announcing today, Karen Caesar.
It's just rolling out, you know, right now, and this rolls into just what we're talking about. As we work for reconsultation, as we look in within Arizona, within the lower basin, and, you know, maybe not all seven basin states, what we recognized is in Arizona specifically, we needed to make sure that everybody that relies on this Colorado River is pulling in the same direction and committing to working together internally in our state, because when we pivot, when we start working with the other states, we can't be at odds with each other internally. So to that end, a couple weeks ago at the League of Arizona Cities and Towns Conference, we launched it's called the Coalition for Protecting Arizona's Lifeline. And it's starting with leaders, mayors of all of our cities many of our cities that take Colorado River. It's going to expand to other facets, business leaders, you know, academics, so we're just right now. The purpose of this is to just get out the word and form a strong voice and get everybody's attention again. Everything, you know, sometimes people think, oh, Colorado River things are going smoothly or not so smoothly, but it doesn't really pertain to me directly. What we're trying to do is really pull together our coalition for protecting Arizona's lifeline. And I'm happy, and it's radio, so your listeners can't see this, but I'm presenting you with a hat that we have that says the coalition, and you're putting it on, and I'll take a picture of it, the Coalition for Protecting Arizona's Lifeline.
It's nice.
And it's just a way to, you know, bring it together. And again, you can go to Coalition for Protecting Arizona's Lifeline online and get some more information. Even as a citizen, you can sign a pledge. We want to grassroots, you know, support this effort. We want to do it from our leaders in our cities and towns, our business leaders, our tribes, our on-river users. The idea is to just really get a rallying cry for Arizona. So if someone, you know, the average citizen maybe doesn't think, well, what can I do about making sure that we're helping protect our Colorado River? Well, you can show your support for this coalition, and that will just help, you know, help lend your voice to this very important effort.
And as a landscape architect, you know about that, right?
Oh, yeah, 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 absolutely, absolutely. One of the other things that all our cities have in common is they are all water smart, water wise. And the thing I say a lot is we need to be able to conserve water in our daily life, in our indoor use, our outdoor use, our landscapes, but we have to protect our communities, our quality of life, and our green infrastructure. And we can do it all with little bit of water and ensure that we have, you know, have a beautiful communities to live in that are water wise.
And, you know, Arizona and the lower basin states of California and Nevada have consistently, Karen Caesar, brought forward collaborative science-based solutions to protect the Colorado River. That story doesn't get out there very often.
And our staff, and shout out to, you know, to the staff at CAP, our technical staff, our policy staff, they've really been some of the architects and the you know, the brain trust behind some of these ideas. And as we look to try to share a smaller river with all the people that are using this river, our, you know, two things are, you know, that we believe strongly. One is everybody that benefits from the river needs to share in its protection and recognize it's smaller and share in the cuts. The second thing is, to do that, we can't necessarily do business as usual. So there's been a lot of ideas that have been floated around, and the modeling and the technical analysis of these are very complicated. Us, along with our partners at ADWR, the staffs there are working very hard to come up with creative, science-based, fact-based, quantifiable, verifiable, implementable solutions to this very complicated problem.
And the website is Protecting Arizona's Lifeline, no apostrophe on arizonaslifeline.com.
Yes, yes. And like I said, you can go there, check out, you can see some videos from our general manager, Brenda Berman, the mayors, just the people that are getting behind this and getting behind the rallying cry to pull together. And, you know, that's important because it is complicated and sometimes it gets lost in the shuffle of everything else going on. But, you know, we're running out of time. A year from now, essentially, our guidelines will be expiring. And as of this moment, we don't have a solid, with lots of ideas, but no solid agreement or consensus or path forward. And so, you know, we're running out of time.
You wanted to do a shout out before we go to Northwest Recharge and Delivery System?
Yeah, this is kind of, you want to talk about, you know, not a behind the scenes or an underground, no pun intended, effort. But, you know, our communities, particularly Marana and Oro Valley, have been taking, and Metro Water, have stored their CAP water in Avra Valley for a long time, which is far away from where they're actually drawing groundwater out. So they've been working now, and they're working on a pipeline to take their water, it's water they've recharged, and pump it to a area where it can be stored closer to where their customers are. It's going to help the groundwater levels in that area, and it's going to give those communities and customers more direct access to their own water.
Now it'd be Oro Valley, Marana, and Metro Water, Tucson.
Exactly.
Metro Water
exactly.
District.
And they're under construction with a big infrastructure project to take this water and bring it to those communities directly. So they're just not recharging water out in Avra Valley, taking their CAP water, putting it out in Avra Valley, but still pumping groundwater closer to where they're using it. So this is another piece of infrastructure that takes time and money and effort and planning and engineering to design and implement. That's in the ground, that's under construction, should be done in about a year, and it's going to be just another great, you know, piece of the big water management puzzle for our community.
All right. KnowYourWaterNews.com, the place for really all your water news about CAP.
Great. Thank you. Well, I believe it or not, the next time we talk will be before the holidays.
I know.
And we'll share any updates at that time. Thank you, Bill.
Karen, and again, our condolences for your father-in-law, Joe Caesar, so well known in this community. He contributed a lot to the, really a pioneering kind of guy, right?
He definitely was. Yeah. And he was a South Side kid, born on the South Side and a self-made man, and really lived and became, you know, the American dream that everybody talks about. Very, very fortunate I am to be in that family.
Oh, and by the way, thanks for the hat that I'm now wearing.
It looks great. It looks great on you. I'm taking a picture and putting
it
on my Facebook.
Take a break right here. Segment number 4 coming up right after this.
Thank you. Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. This would be a terrific time of year to visit Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The land of enchantment is especially enchanting in autumn, and the early autumn would be a beautiful time to get over there. The temperatures, because of the altitude of 5,000 to 7,000 feet, you're going to have delightful, sunny, warm days and cool, crisp, autumn-like nights. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org and then take the three-hour drive approximately over to Silver City. Dr. Mark Sykes is on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. He's the senior scientist and former CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute, which has been doing great work here in town for more than 50 years. A nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Well, I'm a little under the weather, Bill.
Well,
so my voice sounds a little weird.
Well, you getting ready for your birthday party?
Yep. That's right. Working on and engaging some pipers and people. So, but I should be fine by then.
All right, good. Well, an early happy birthday greeting to you, Mark. Any news on the what's really been iffy, hasn't it, to try to get some funding restored for NASA and go ahead.
Basically, what's going on is that there's been a proposal by the administration for a budget for NASA and many other science organizations that basically gut them. And so the question is Congress going to follow suit? Or are they going to create a budget that has monies more aligned with recent years of funding? And now the markups for NASA by the House and the Senate were good. They were, close to 2024. And so that would be a best case scenario. But I tell you, people say one thing and they do another these days. And I've seen a lot of these people crumble, OMB, starts leaning on them, and we'll have to see what happens. But in that context, I don't know if you've heard about this discovery that was published in Nature, I think today, about the possible discovery of life on Mars.
No, tell me about it. Tell our listeners about this, please.
Well, I've just been quickly scanning through the paper and stuff and haven't seen the news releases, and of course everybody tries to be very careful when talking about this stuff. But there's some signatures of minerals that appear as blotches on this wall in Jezero Crater, where the Perseverance rover is, and they're very similar to things that you see in freshwater lakes and such, where microbes have processed some of the minerals in the water and left little deposits there. So when microbes process things, you get certain kind of isotopic ratios of stuff. And the authors consider that, well, there are non-microbial explanations for producing this. But if that were to go on, you should be seeing these other things as well, which they don't see.
The quote I have in front of me, this very well could be the clearest sign of life that has ever been found on Mars, according to the acting NASA administrator, Sean Duffy. He made that comment just a few minutes ago, Mark.
Yes. And this would be from, you know, billions of years ago, but my feeling has always been that if we find evidence that life existed on Mars billions of years ago, it exists today.
Hmm. And researchers, again, from what I'm seeing here in the news from this news conference, researchers, Mark, had previously speculated that the crater within the Bright Angel formation could have contained micro life when it served as a lake.
Right. And that was one of the reasons for targeting this area. And so, so very, very neat result. And of course, more work is needed, and it would really require bringing some of these samples back, which we will not be doing, because, well, in fact, and this is the thing about the context of the budgets that we're facing here. This stuff comes to an end.
Mm.
This stuff, you know, we're going to lose the people. They're looking at right now. NASA is looking at reducing a research number of research proposals funded by 80%.
Ah.
And you know, you destroy the community of people that look at this information and make these interpretations and does the work in order to determine what the heck is going on, and could it be life? Could it be, you know, abiotic processes? You know, we're you know, our good people will find other jobs in other countries. And of course, you know, the Chinese are going to be bringing stuff back from Mars, and in 2028, you know, just a few years from now, and you know, because we did not have our act together. It was all kind of, oh, let's do this. Oh, then what's next? Oh my gosh, we didn't think this through. Yeah, because we didn't have a end-to-end plan.
Mm.
On how you actually do this sample return before we started executing it.
Before we let you go, the rover, Perseverance rover, it uncovered this new evidence. How long is that rover good for?
Well, that's another thing. We've invested a lot of money in these rovers, you know, the Perseverance, Curiosity, and they could probably go for many more years, you know, because they have their nuclear power sources on them, and that's something that they also, that the budget proposal wants to do, is we have a whole bunch of missions that keep on chugging at a tiny amount, you know, of continued investment for bringing back really, really excellent science, and that's the proposal is to pull the plug on all that stuff.
Okay, Mark, I hope you feel better. We're gonna have to leave it right there.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
And happy birthday to you. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mark. Bye. Sykes with us on our live line. That's going to wrap it up. On behalf of Dr. Sykes and Brendan on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Same greeting pretty much every day as we close, wishing everybody well.